Welcome everyone to the inaugural and potentially last Ringside Chat podcast. I am Gary Freeland. With me, as always, is the co-founder of Ringside Chat, Joey Kasvinsky, an independent professional wrestler and wrestling figure connoisseur, Court Montgomery. How are you guys doing?
All right.
If I would stop having computer problems, that'd be great.
Yeah, me too. We'd probably already be done.
Hey, fuck you, okay?
Yeah, we only started like an hour late, but whatever. Hey.
No, we're not going to start this shit off like this.
All right, well, yeah, hopefully this isn't the last, but you never know.
Probably will be, it's okay.
Yeah, one and only.
Yep. So, hopefully it's the first of many, and eventually we'll have others. We have a bunch of ideas that we want to try out. I don't think we really need to go through them right now, but I thought tonight we kind of talk about how we became fans of professional wrestling, some of our earliest memories and things like that, so... We'll start with Court since he kind of drug us along here. What were some of your earliest memories of being a wrestling fan?
Okay, well, the very first one is, I mean, we all have our, like, you can remember the first memory, like, your youngest one. And mine was my great-grandma had me pushing me around a department store. And I was in a cart with a Smash from Demolition action figure and Akeem the African Dream. They were still in the fucking package. But I was damn sure having the best match of all time with them in the middle of this fucking store. The next one I think of as far as actually watching wrestling is it was Kamala versus Papa Shango. So this could have been about late 92, early 93, because Kamala was babyface. And I ran behind my grandpa's chair because I was scared shitless of Papa Shango. Like, I did not like that motherfucker at all. But yeah, that's really about it. Early WWF, I could be here for days talking about that. That's really what got me into it, you know, as far as hooking me to be a fan. And then later on, I credit RVD and Jerry Lynn for really kicking me into wanting to actually be a wrestler.
I would say that Gary's probably the one that influenced me enough to get into professional wrestling, because as a kid, obviously we were cousins, we grew up together, and he's a little bit older than me. So I remember going over and visiting him when he was little and stuff, and he'd have the old LJNs and stuff, and he would always tell me that the real sports like baseball and stuff like that were fixed, but professional wrestling, that was real. Real. Mm-hmm. And that always stuck with me. But I really didn't get into it until, like, I would say probably around, like, 95, 96, because I would always go over his house, and he would be playing with that stuff. And I was like, well, you know what? I'm always going over there. I should probably have something. I should get into something like that just so we have something to talk about. So I remember buying a WWF magazine with Bret Hart on the cover, as he was going into, I believe it was Royal Rumble 95, I think that's what it was. And then from there on, I got thanks to the wonderful people at the cable company, they screwed up our cable, and I got a free Royal Rumble pay-per-view, and that's pretty much what got me from there.
Yeah, for me, it's probably, I can't even remember when I started watching. To be honest with you, my parents joke that my first word was double, because I was trying to say WWF, and I would choke on that, apparently. And as long as I can remember, I can always remember the old NWA shows, I can remember the old WWF shows. My dad took me to an old house show at the Civic Arena in Pittsburgh. I don't remember, but I remember seeing from the pictures Hogan and Orndorff wrestled, so that was technically the first show I was ever at. And I was kind of hooked early on. That's all I did, and I'm not surprised hearing Joey say that, because, yeah, literally any time I could play with action figures or a video game or watch it, or, I mean, I have tablets and tablets and tablets of just booking genius from five-year-old Gary of matches and things that I had designed, and then I started using Joey as a fucking wrestling buddy and beat the shit out of him and put him in sharpshooters, and he blames me for his scoliosis and all this other bullshit. But
well, let me tell you, you know, when Gary finally, you know, basically got his own room in his house, and it was a game room slash bedroom, and it was basically a concrete floor with just like not even a quarter of an inch worth of carpet on there. So it was literally like the freaking dungeon, and he was literally like Stu. He would go, "Here, I saw this. Let me put this on you." And me being, you know, little, would be like, "All right, yeah, sure." And then, you know, he just like reefs back, and then he would go, "Yeah, just let me know when it hurts." And I'm like, "It hurts." And then he let it go. And it's like, "Let's do this next one." I'm like, "Man, this sucks." But yeah, I mean, maybe it wasn't exactly Gary putting the sharpshooter on that gave me a little bit of the curvature of the spine, but you know, it's a good excuse.
I was trying to stretch it back out. I was just trying it was already curved, so I was trying to stretch it and straighten it.
Well, at least it wasn't as bad as me. See, I had a cousin that he would come over, and he lived out of town, so I always drug him around, and he was about 6-7 years younger than me. I hit him with every move, every submission, everything I could. One day I hit him in the head with a shovel, and that kind of ruined our relationship.
That's all right.
That's all right.
Whatever.
You can't be friends with if you can't hit someone with a shovel, then you shouldn't be friends.
I agree.
Yeah, that's all right. I literally witnessed Gary pull a hockey stick that in the middle of winter out of a place. I think it was like a play school or whatever swimming pool that was frozen, and get cracked in the head with it. So,
oh god.
Yeah,
Jill did that.
Yeah, he still lived. So yeah, his sister hit him in the head with that. So
I got a pretty thick skull.
Well, God. Okay.
Gary's the king of hardcore, I guess. So, yeah. Well, I know one of the things that with like my one of my first memories that really sticks out, and it probably will lead into the next question would be, going to a house show. I know Gary talked about his first one. I know he's probably got way more than I do. But I remember going to my first house show probably about a year or two years after I got into wrestling. And going to a house show and seeing, we were on a floor level probably about 3 or 4 rows back from the arena in Pittsburgh, and watching The Undertaker and Mankind fight out in the crowd, and like literally 15 feet from me. And so I was, and as a kid, like seeing some of them chair shots and hits to the head, like those suckers are pretty stiff. And I mean, kind of feel bad looking at it fully now, but.
Oh yeah. See, I don't really have many cool like going to like WWE, WWF, WCW shows. Like the first live event that I ever went to was a Nitro in 97 at in Roanoke, Virginia. And I remember my mom saying, as soon as they go on sale, just you had to call and get tickets then, you know, unless you wanted to go to the box office. She said, if they go on sale at this time, I'm gonna call and I'm gonna get us the best seats we can. Awesome. Well, I was there, and she did not get through until about an hour after, you know, the time started. But I was still excited. I was like, I don't care. You know, I'm going to Nitro. I'm going to see Sting. This is, you know, Sting hadn't, this is before Starrcade when he wrestled Hogan, but he had started doing the Crow gimmick. He was coming down from the ceiling. That's all I wanted to see. You know, I just wanted to see Sting, man. Fuck everything else. And, we get there. And we are 3 rows from the very top seats in the fucking building. And Sting wasn't even on the card. I was pissed. And that's pretty much the story of my life on every big event I've ever gotten to. Like, I've been to WrestleMania. I've been to Survivor Series. Plenty of house shows. Raws. Nitros. And they all fucking sucked.
I remember going to that same house show going, and I think Ultimate Warrior was supposed to be advertised for the show, and of course that was when he was doing his, where he wasn't going to house shows anymore, and then he left the company. So they replaced him with Psycho Sid. So it was kind of a little bit of a letdown, because I thought I was going to see Ultimate Warrior, but you know, it is what it is.
And now looking back on it, it's probably a godsend.
It kind of was. Well, you know, the one highlight that I did have to that one, so technically as a kid, I only went to like two house shows, and I went to more shows as I got older. But there was the British Bulldog was there, and he was flipping off the crowd, and so I think the kid might have been special needs. I don't know, but I just remember him running up to the fence or whatever, the guardrails and stuff, and looking at Bulldog as he's flipping off the crowd, and the kid comes back, he says, "I told him to fuck off." I'm like, what? I'm like, holy cow.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I remember, like, speaking of like going to shows and stuff, I've been to less as an adult than I did as a kid, which, hell, I haven't been to that many in general. But my first ever WWF show was a house show at the Greensboro Coliseum. And one thing I was always happy about is I got to see Owen Hart live. This is when he was teaming with Jeff Jarrett. And they wrestled, I think it was Edge and Christian. It could have been one of them with Gangrel, because it was during the Brood. But I specifically remember I brought a fucking sign to a house show. Like, why the fuck did I think to do that? Like, I really think I'm going to be on TV or something. I remember pissing off everyone that sat behind me, because I've got this Mankind sign, because he had just won the belt. So, you know, it was a very short time after he won the title. I think the main event was, like, it was him and Austin against The Rock and Kane. And I was just so fucking happy, and I just ruined the main event for everybody. I don't know why that sticks out to me, but...
I think the first show I actually remember was this, it was some awful house show. It was like 94, right in that wheelhouse of where all the WWE was, the business was down. And all I remember is, yeah, we were about four rows back from the rail. Virgil came out, and this is before Meat Sauce Mania and all that craziness that he's doing now, and was given like this big, like, motivational speech to the people that showed up before, which is, thinking back on it now and probably all the bullshit that he has done since, it's ridiculous. But I remember that, and then I remember he was wrestling Skinner, and I don't know if you guys remember Skinner at all.
Yeah,
most ridiculous like gimmick ever. And all I remember is this morbidly obese guy like sitting like two rows in front of me, and he just did the most ridiculous like mocking him like for literally like 15 minutes of the match. He would just stop, go over to this guy, point at him, and just scream obscenities at him, and like had his arms out like he was like bloated and was just bouncing back and forth and just calling this guy horrible names. And it was probably the first time I was ever really exposed to like expletives at all. And now I use them like commas and sentences. So,
probably get along.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. So I don't know why that stuck out, but it was just, it cracked me up. And other than that, it was pretty boring show, but that one in particular really stuck out for me.
Not for nothing. When Virgil did his babyface turn, he had the sweetest theme music in, like, the mid-90s. Like, I love Virgil's theme song for some reason. Didn't care about anything else, but I loved his theme song.
He did have a pretty good song.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Now I can't avoid the guy. He lives in the area. And any convention, it doesn't even have to be wrestling. I saw him at a fucking dog show. The one time I took my wife, and he had a whole booth set up, like Virgil Wrestling Superstar, like the meme. It was just sitting there, and anyone that would pass him, he was just talking to him about making money and trying to talk people into paying $20 for a picture and an autograph, and just insanity.
Well, my favorite is... Okay.
Go ahead. No, you're fine.
I was going to say, my favorite was, I think it was last year or 2 years ago, Gary and I went to see Ring of Honor in Pittsburgh, and... We're standing, like, in standing room only, waiting for the event to start. And I look over, and this place is small. They have the merch tables for Ring of Honor. They have a couple tables set up for a couple of the wrestlers, like Adam Cole, the Bucks, and stuff like that. Then there's Virgil. And he's and he's hanging out with this guy selling like gutters for roof. For roofs. And like that was their pitch. So like you would go talk to him and then like you would listen to like a 5-minute speech about, you know, gutters for your house and stuff like that. I'm like, even if I wanted to buy gutters, I'm not buying them from the guy that has Virgil. Like
I think that's where he lives. So that's
oh, the gutter? Yeah, well, yeah.
That's potential. See, at least you guys get, like, y'all run into Virgil, I mean, which isn't saying a whole lot, but, you know, like, what my claim to fame is for who I see all the time is, other than, well, I see Jimmy Valiant a lot, but who lives in the same town as me, is Johnny fucking Fairplay. Like, I'm talking, I go to eat, I go to fucking get gas. I saw that motherfucker in the ER a couple years ago when I hurt myself. Like, I see him every fucking where. So count your blessings for seeing fucking Virgil.
I'm not sure which one's worse.
Well, what's funny is, like, we're like 20 minutes from, or, like, Gary thinks, like, 20 minutes. I'm, like, 40 minutes from outside of Pittsburgh. So you would think, like, you would run into, like, Bruno or something like that. I don't know. You get fucking meat sauce, man. It's ridiculous. And the funny thing is, like, we've gone to these Steel City conventions, and, you know, he's among all the dealers and stuff, not even with the wrestlers and where they're at. And, it's ridiculous. Why do I want to post $20 for a $1 million man belt that, you know,
that he stole from DiBiase?
Exactly.
Or from High Spots, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Probably one of those foam deals. Probably bought it at fucking Toys R Us.
It probably is. You know, I was just online looking up that house show that I went to and stuff, and I'm with Court though. I did get to see Owen Hart, and he was with Davey Boy Smith when they were the tag champions. And I saw Shawn Michaels beat Goldust when he was a champion.
Yeah, I'm trying to look up mine. That's funny you said that, because I can remember off the top of my head, like I told you, the main event. This was, I want to say, because they were leading towards WrestleMania 15. So, like, Boss Man versus The Undertaker was on the card, you know, long before their Hell in a Cell match. I remember Triple H, while he was still in DX, versus Test. I saw so much. I just remember specifically... Billy Gunn wrestled Ken Shamrock for the Intercontinental title, and Ken Shamrock was the champion. He was in the corporation at the time. And I had to go pee, like, so bad. But I was like, I'm gonna wait, you know, intermission should be soon. And I remember my grandpa saying to me, it's a title match. You know who's gonna win. It's not on TV. Just go use the bathroom. Okay, you got a good point. So, we get up to go to the bathroom, and I get almost in there, and I hear the New Age Outlaw theme song come on. I'm like, oh my god, I just fucking missed a house show title change. And it ended up being a dusty finish, but I was probably 10 years old at that point. I was so fucking mad. I was like, I just missed a goddamn title switch.
Well, this was the first one I went to. It was Bob Holly defeated the Brooklyn Brawler. Jake Roberts and Aldo Montoya defeated Bradshaw and Zebekiah. Wyndham pinned Hunter Hearst Helmsley. Austin beats Savio Vega. And then the fucking Grimm Twins defeated the Smoking Guns. Hart and Smith versus the Godwins. Taker and Mankind. And Mero Farouk. Then there was Sid versus Vader. And then Michaels and Goldust.
That was a star-studded affair.
I want to know who the fuck the Grimm Twins are. When did I miss fucking that?
I didn't know they fucking won matches.
I did. Yeah.
What the shit, man?
Yeah.
Okay, I just found mine. So apparently I was wrong that it was Austin, Kane, Rock, and Mankind in a Fatal 4-Way match. Let's see here. Jarrett and Owen Hart, they actually wrestled Road Dogg and X-Pac. Edge and Christian wrestled the Job Squad, which was Bob Holly and Blue Meanie. Steve Blackman beat Dan Severn. And then there's two that I'm about to tell you that were really funny to me later on. Luna beat Jackie in a number one contenders match for the women's title. So this, well, it is February 99, by the way. So about a week later, I'm watching Sunday Night Heat, and there they number one contenders match for the women's title between these two. And I'm like, I know who the fuck's going to win. Like, why would you do the same thing? I announce this at a house show and then run it a week later at a different arena. Like, I was, so, and then that one and, the Hardy Boys, and this is why when they were still in like the fucking spandex gimmicks, like they didn't have the pants yet. They were still like punky baby faces, you know, beat the Acolytes, Val Venus and Godfather, and D'Lo Brown and Mark Henry in a fatal four-way. And if I'm not mistaken, I think it was about 2 weeks later, that was like a number one contenders match for the tag titles. And then the Hardys wrestled, like, I think, like the Acolytes in like a regular tag match. And I'm like, I know who the fuck's going to win this one, too. Like, it was like, their first real big push. And I'm like, why the fuck would you do this at a house show, announce them as number one contenders matches, and then on televised program later, do the same shit? Because people are going to know who the fuck's going to win that were at these house shows. It just blew my mind. It's like I said, like, at 10 years old, I'm like, wait a minute, why do they have to win this shit twice? Like, I didn't just
They don't care win. About you.
I know, the fucking assholes, like all of them.
Gary got to go see some Top Flight Entertainment with his shows that he went to.
Which ones?
Well, let's see, you got to see the Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon ladder match from SummerSlam. And
I
then...
did, but everything else on that card, go ahead.
Oh my god, that's like my favorite fucking ladder match. Like, I like that one so much, even the fuck-ups with it. I don't know why I always like that one better than the fucking WrestleMania one they had.
And then you got
Go ahead. Yeah, we were up in Peanut Heaven, and they had that fucking blimp, that Stridex blimp or whatever the fuck that was. Oh.
Stridex, I think?
Everyone was chanting, kill the blimp, for like 3/4 of the show before they finally got rid of it. But, yeah, that was, like, the only good match on that fucking show. The rest of it was awful. They had Barry Horowitz on that fucking show. I think he went over, too.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he went over Candido, right?
Yeah, yeah. And then they had, yeah, Mabel was in the main event. That was fucking awful.
Fucking
they
Pink Doctor, Mabel, yep.
Yep. Dr. Isaac Yankum was on there. I think he was fighting Brett. I'm not sure. But,
oh, my God. If we ever get to where we review shit, I really want to review that fucking show now. Like, this is gold.
You probably see my old fat ass on there somewhere. Especially if they had any blimp cams or something, you probably had a nice fucking view of me. That thing was obnoxious. But the best one I was at the King of the Ring when Mankind got tossed off the cell.
Holy shit!
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That. Yeah, so... I remember because it was it was fucking terrifying. It's really the only thing I can remember from that show because I've never seen anything like that and will probably never ever see anything like that again. But I just remember there was just this horrific storm in Pittsburgh. There was like tornado warnings and shit, but we still went. And I remember the building shaking from the thunder and the lightning and the wind and just had this, it just added to the whole spectacle of him being tossed through the, off the cell and then down through the cell. And just the dead silence of the crowd, because, I mean, it literally looked like he was dead. I mean, especially that second one, when he hit the ring, I mean, that I'll never forget that. I don't even remember what else was on that show, but that bump he took was just fucking insane.
Wow, yeah, because, like I said, I've been to a couple of Raws and stuff, too. I got to go to the 2001 Survivor Series with the... versus the Alliance. And yeah, like, the show wasn't that great overall. I mean, it's just, like, I remember, like, me marking out just by, because, like, before the show, you know, like, they don't really do much of it now, but, you know, the announcers had their own theme songs. You know, JR comes out, and, like, the biggest pop for me, the first one, it was Paul Heyman coming out to the ECW theme song. I was fucking giddy about that shit. And, that was my first cage match I got to see live, and even though I was kind of up in fucking nosebleeds on that one too, but watching Jeff Hardy miss that swanton through that table off top of the cage was a really cool moment to see. And then I was at WrestleMania, I think it was 20, which one was it, Atlanta? Was it 27?
I think so.
Yeah, and so I get to tell everybody that I went to like one of the only WrestleManias in the history of WrestleManias to set up for the fucking next year's main event. So yeah, go me.
Well,
good.
No, good.
No, I don't have anything important.
This is going to be every fucking episode. We're all going to be stumbling over each other, and we're all just going to forget what the fuck we're talking about.
Like I said, this is probably the last one, so we won't have to worry about it too much.
Well, no, I was just going to, you know, to piggyback on the house show stuff and things like that. Going as a kid and stuff, did any of you guys go and buy stuff from the merch tables that they had there? Because I remember buying the Bret Hart sunglasses, and yep. then getting the Shawn Michaels heart shaped sunglasses and fingerless gloves. And kind of looking back on them glasses and gloves, I probably should. I even got mad because I wanted the earrings because I was like, I want to be like Shawn Michaels, and I'm glad my dad talked me into that one.
I didn't have a chance to go to any shows till like the Attitude Era. So, but my mom was really good about getting me stuff out of the WWF magazine, the catalog. So I had the Shawn Michaels gloves, I had the Diesel gloves, the Diesel sunglasses, the Razor Ramon necklace. But then, like, even going to the Attitude Era, that was the first thing I did. Like, I had to go to gimmick table. Like, I remember when I went to my first ever WWF show was at one in Greensboro. I was just giving you the results for. I bought every fucking shirt that I could, man. Like, I can't even remember all the shirts. Cause it was past the Austin 316 stage, but you know, there's like 12 different Steve Austin shirts, and like, there was DX shirts and all kinds of crazy bullshit. But that was always a big thing for me. It's like, I had to go. Honestly, I can't remember the last time I went to a WWE event and didn't buy at least one thing. Like, I don't know. It's just, I'd much rather pay like the extra $5 to, cause it's kind of just a memory. Like, hey, I got this shirt at this event and yada yada, but I love merch tables. I'm really fucking guilty about that.
I'd always go and get the programs. That was something I'd always make sure I had money for to buy. I had the Austin 316 shirt. I had the NWO shirt like everyone else that watched wrestling during that time. But yeah, I still have my programs somewhere in my house. In a box somewhere, just all the shows that I've been to. Should probably dig those out at some point.
That's something I do wish I had done. I never got programs. I was so worried about t-shirts that I just looked past it. Oh, one of my favorite pieces of merchandise I got was at that Survivor Series, was I got the RVD thumb, you know, the foam thumbs.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Fucking obnoxiously gigantic, but I love those damn things.
Oh, man, yeah.
They were so awesome. That and my barbed wire Y2J shirt that had like 12 holes in it. I didn't give a shit. It was my Y2J shirt. Like, I wore it everywhere.
See, I was always disappointed because I was a big Razor Ramon fan. So, like, by the time I got to go to the shows and stuff like that, he was already gone. So, like, they stopped carrying his merchandise and stuff. So I was always bummed out. I couldn't go out and get the shirts that they had for them. The only shirt I can recall them having was like a black one with his image on it and stuff. It was like all in gold or whatever, but I remember that bumming me out.
Now you just rock his Canadian tuxedo.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Fucking Denim Dan running down.
I just bust in there and, you know, tell random people you don't know who I am, but you know why I'm here.
Look at the adjective, play.
You know what's funny was, I think it was last year or so, yeah, that Gary and I went to Steel City, and I went solely to go see Scott Hall, and he was with Kevin Nash and stuff. So I was like, I'm going to wear this Max Moon t-shirt just to see, because I remember hearing a story about him helping get Conan fired before he got to be boys with Conan later on, and just to see what he'd say. And I hem-hawed around about it, and I finally did it, and I went and I ponied up the freaking money, and the first thing out of his freaking mouth was like, holy shit, that's a fucking sweet t-shirt. And he looks at me, he goes, fucking Kev, get over here, look at this fucking shirt, we're taking a picture, fuck it. And I'm like, alright, I'll wear this shirt now from now on.
Worked that well for you, didn't it?
Hell yeah.
You've gotten a lot of compliments on that stupid shirt. Every show that we've gone to, you've had at least one person walk up to you and like, where'd you get that shirt?
Yeah, can I take a picture? I mean, but yeah, looking at that results for that 95 SummerSlam show, holy shit, Gary, that...
Oh, it's so fucking bad, brutal. Dude.
It was so bad. That was probably the first show I can remember where I was fucking bored, and it was a pay-per-view. I was so disappointed. I'm thinking, it's SummerSlam, it's like their second biggest show of the year, I'm gonna get some, like, decent fucking matches. And, yeah, it was just that ladder match, and I mean, the ladder match was outstanding, but the rest of it was just the drizzling shit.
I would have to think the Hakushi versus 1-2-3 Kid match would have to have been good.
Oh, but that was on that card, that's right.
I don't remember, honestly. Maybe my age, I got Alzheimer's, early onset Alzheimer's, don't remember. I'll have to go back and watch that fucking show.
Or probably all the bullshit that happened, they just drowned it out, you know?
Yeah, just seeing fucking Dr. Isaac Yankum come out and try to get that shit over. That may have been one of the worst gimmicks of all fucking time.
Well, you say what you will, they're making an action figure of that, goddammit, and I'm so fucking excited. Like, I cannot wait. I cannot contain my excitement. Like, I saw that announced, and I was like, yes, it's like, it's the best shit since Savage's figure came out. Like, I'm so happy.
You literally own every action figure I think ever made.
Literally, the only one that I'm really missing that I really, truly want is Ultimate Warrior's LJN. I own every figure of his that was ever made. Well, other than those limited edition, like, 1 in 550 bullshits. But, yeah, the LJN Warrior is, like, the only thing I don't have, pretty much.
Yeah, you have that whole fancy setup down in your basement where you're, like, staged pictures with your action figures.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's impressive.
So that's actually a regulation size pool table too. Like, that shit is gigantic.
Like the second dorkiest thing you've done with wrestling. The first being writing for that website with me, booking fake ECW shows.
Oh my god! I was thinking about that shit the other day, man. We had fun with that shit though, man. Like I credit you, honestly, for getting me into fucking indie wrestling around that time, though, because I'm looking, and I'm like, who the fuck is Paul London? Like, you were writing about all these random guys, and, God, dude, that was so much fun, dude. I was like, I personally was about 15, 16 when I first, like, met you doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't even know how I got into that. I was, like, 18 at the time, and, I was like, I would always read them, and they had a pretty decent following when the guy, I forget the guy's name, I think his name was John, started that on prowrestling.com.
Mm-hmm. And, Does that website even exist anymore?
Who the fuck knows? Probably not. but I've tried to search for shows, because I lost that computer a long time ago, all the shows that we used to write, and all the shitty angles and things, but I can't find them. But yeah, that was a lot. We actually had a decent like viewership, because the website, the webmaster, or whatever the hell they called it, used to send me, like, the data on that. We used to have, like, at least 1,000 people. I mean, it sounds ridiculous now, thinking that was a lot of people, but that, I mean, at 18 years old, writing stupid fantasy booking shit, that was a big deal, that 1,000 people wanted to read my goofy-ass ECW Masked Man angle with Rob Van Dam and all that other bullshit.
Oh my god, it was some fun shit though. Who was it? Was it you or do you? They were going off on a tangent, but I said this is what we're gonna fucking do from now on. Who do you remember? Was it you or somebody else that ran the gimmick where the Dark Patriot was the Ultimate Warrior?
That was someone else.
I remember that. I was fucking. To me, it was crazy as hell. I'm like, who the fuck would not recognize the Ultimate Warrior in a mask?
Yeah.
Like, even though we're typing this, I get the audience, but we're pretending this is real. Everyone's gonna fucking know the Warrior's got two moves. He's my favorite of all time. I'm not hating on him, but he's got two fucking moves. You know, a grunt and a snort. Like, we know it's him.
It's giant fucking perms popping out of the top of his white blue mask. Okay.
Oh, Warrior had the best hair in the 80s. I don't give a fuck who you are.
Oh man, he had like the winger / poison / rat fucking hairdo going on. There was fucking Aquanet in that motherfucker. It's probably a good thing that they didn't do that much pyro back then, because if he had a pyro during his fucking entrance, he'd have went up.
That motherfucker would have had the damn Michael Jackson syndrome. Like, it just poof, it's a gone. Like,
right, he'd have seen this freaking streak looking like it's like Richard Pryor jogging down the street, and then he'd have been out by the time he hit the rope to do the rope shake.
Oh, shit. I wouldn't expect a Richard Pryor joke. That's great. Holy shit.
But, yeah, I mean, well, it's the same thing with, like, Diesel. I remember hearing Jim Cornette go, you know, Diesel's got five moves, and that includes the hair flip. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then again, for as many times as people thought the Warrior died, I mean, they could have done the Dark Patriot, you know.
You know, that's true. God, I can't, other than, like, you know, because I remember, like, when I was younger, like, it was some kind of a magazine. They were like, the new Ultimate Warrior is actually the Texas Tornado. I'm like, there's no fucking way. Like, Tornado was huge, but he wasn't Warrior huge, to me at least.
No.
And then, like, I'm trying to think of, like, okay, so, Warrior, you know, he had tons of death rumors. Then when they changed Sting's gimmick, they claimed he was dead. I remember they claimed that Kane died at one point and was replaced. Like, it's, I wonder, like, if people just got bored and started coming up with this shit, or, like, what? Because, like, I just don't know where stuff like that comes from.
Yeah, that blows my mind. Because I even remember as a kid when Warrior finally came back, I think it was in, what, 97 or whatever, and talking with people that were older than me that had followed it a lot longer than I had, and they were like, oh, he's dead, and he's long dead, and he's come back, and they brought somebody else back. And I remember just even looking at pictures going, nah, he kind of still looks the same. I'm thinking that's still the same guy. Like,
yeah. Oh, just recently, like, in the past fucking year, I had someone try their best to convince me that Kane was not the original Kane. This was some new guy, because the original Kane died. I'm like, no, it's just, go back and look at Fake Diesel. That's fucking Kane, okay? It's the same guy. Like, stop it. Like,
yeah, even if you go back and watch fucking Smoky Mountain, that's that same guy.
Oh, speaking of that, if you watch that old Smoky Mountain shit when he was Unabomb, he had a mean-ass leg drop off the top rope. Okay, that's just, okay. I always wonder why he never did that. I mean, I know he's supposed to be more robotic as Kane, but man, that leg drop was sweet as hell.
I get it.
Probably because he didn't want to do it every show.
That's true.
Yeah, well, about, yeah, makes sense.
Fucking ass, yeah.
I mean, I gotta give him credit. Like, even, like, him and Smoky Mountain and even Al Snow, I think those guys are like, were freaking fantastic down there. And then when you get into the WWF, they almost stale or what?
Well, it's one of those things where people hate on John Cena for it. It's like, I can understand it. When you're wrestling five times a week or more, you don't want to do every fucking thing. You got to do the bare minimum to get by. Cause most of those fans, like, we're all assholes. We're smart marks, whatever. But, like, to like your 8 to 12-year-old fans or whatever, they're going to pop just as much off a hip toss as they are a Canadian Destroyer.
Okay.
So you don't have to do this shit. So I guess I understand the idea behind it, you know. Well, but, like, I was always mad Brock Lesnar never did the Shooting Star, and then he did it and he almost broke his fucking neck.
But you're also coming from the perspective of someone that actually has gotten into the ring. You're the only one of us that has actually gone in and pursued a career in wrestling. So you also have a kind of a different look at things in regards to that, and don't, where a lot of fans don't think about that. They just want the biggest and best thing that they can get because they paid this amount of money for this show and that's what they want. Whereas they don't really consider, yeah, you may be working 4, 5, 6 nights a week and you don't want to fucking hurt yourself and potentially put yourself on the shelf for months on end.
Exactly. And another thing too, that I'm probably thinking is like, give you an example. I went to see a house show a couple of years back, probably about 4 years ago or so. And I remember Cena and Dolph Ziggler had a program during that time. And went to a house show, and they had a fucking 30-minute match that, like, blew away anything I ever saw the two of them do. Like, they were doing shit that I never saw the two of them do before or after. The one thing I thought of was, like, it's a house show. Why the fuck are you doing more? But it's probably because they know they can get away with, if they fuck it up, oh, well, who saw it? The thousands of people here in attendance instead of the millions of people watching all over the world. So it's probably another way of thinking about it. You're going to do the stuff you know you can do good and will be perfect every time instead of fucking up on live television. So I guess, I mean, that's probably another way of thinking about it too, you know?
Yeah, it makes sense. Test out some new things and kind of work the kinks out before putting it out there for everyone else to see.
Absolutely. Well, going back and talking about that, I keep going back to SummerSlam 95. I don't know why.
It's a perfect segue.
I had seen this on one of the Facebook groups. I'm thinking it, I forget which one it was, but anyways, Roy Lucier had posted this one, and he does a lot of on these older groups where he's posting videos and stuff and stuff. And he had posted a thing that I thought was pretty neat. It said, you know, has there ever been a match where you either heard about it or you saw the angle being built up to it, or it might have been even an older match that had never been released on the internet and up until lately, that you were excited for, and then you see it, and it was the drizzling fucking shits?
I'm going to wait. I want to go. Y'all go first on this, because I have too many. I'm going to try to narrow it down.
Joe, go ahead.
I mean, personally, like, not a whole lot. I should say that. The one that really sticks out to my mind was, I remember reading, like, After magazines and stuff like that from way, way back when I was able to find them or whatever. And people would always talk about that last Battle of Atlanta.
Oh, fuck, so, yeah, you just took one from me, yep.
So, the WWE finally releases it and watch it, and I'm like, wow, it's 10 minutes of Tommy Rich and Buzz Sawyer fighting, and then the rest of it's Ole Anderson and Paul Ellering just go at it. Like, this was terrible.
I was so fucking mad when that happened, man, because I remember it was like someone had finally found the Holy Grail. I was so fucking excited to see that. And I saw the time, you know, it was 30 minutes. And I'm like, fuck yeah, man, it's going to be great. And the same thing, the match is over in like 9-10 minutes. And I'm like, wait a minute, what the fuck else are they going to do? And then it's Ole Anderson. I'm like, no, please, God, don't do this to me.
And even like, good.
No, good.
I was going to say, even like that, I remember, because I don't think I had seen WrestleMania, I think, six, yeah, I think I hadn't seen WrestleMania 6 yet, and it was Hogan versus Warrior in WCW, and I remember thinking, like, oh, man, this is going to be really good, too, and then I was like, so let down, at least I won.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, but, oh, God, yeah, because, I mean, maybe it's not perfect from a technical sense, but fucking, I always say, I always put in my top favorite matches of all times, Warrior and Hogan from 6. So, yeah, seeing fucking Halloween Havoc, I was just like, wait, what the fuck is this?
I'm going to go a different route. It's not so much a match, but a promotion. XPW. All I heard about was fucking ECW. This is going to be the next ECW. ECW's closing down. If you like that, you're really going to love XPW. So I bought a couple fucking tapes of XPW, and it had to be the worst fucking garbage I've ever seen in my entire life. It was so bad. I don't even think I kept the tapes. I'm not like made of money. I think I fucking smashed them. They were so bad. I was so pissed off that I wasted $10 on these stupid fucking videotapes that I think I broke them. It was just trash. It was complete gutter trash.
Yeah, okay. I have a very similar story, but XPW. So, like, I can't even remember how I found out who the fuck they were or anything, but I stumbled across them. And, I mean, I'm like, fucking, they have Conan's here and Sabu's here. And, like, who the fuck is this Messiah guy? So, like, my local video store had one tape. And it was, like, within the first 6 months they'd opened. And, like, so it showed, like, it was mainly highlights. There was only one full match on the whole cassette, listen, VHS. And, I'm like, well, this isn't too bad. You know, this is be fucking great. So I went and spent money and bought like 3 or 4 fucking DVDs from the website and fucking same shit, man. Like, I was so mad. Like, I think I've watched them like twice. Only thing I really cared about from them was Lizzie Borden's tits.
Who was that big fat fucker that was like almost perfectly round? He was bald.
Vic Grimes?
No, it wasn't Vic Grimes. It was Vic Grimes could actually work, kind of.
That's
this
true.
This guy couldn't do anything. He just kind of just waddled in and would just fall in thumbtacks and like beds of shit and everything else
was
that
it
they put outside the ring.
The clown? Was it like Pogo the Clown or something? Or Pondo the Clown?
No, it just looked like, honestly, it looked like a fucking fan. Just can't they just drug him out of the crowd and he's, I want to say Supreme. I don't
yes.
remember.
Yeah, fucking Supreme, yeah.
He was the shits. He was awful. I think that was, he may have been the first or second match I saw on the show, and it was some kind of death match bullshit. And he was fucking awful. And all I could hear, and that was one of the ones they were trying to, the people that I was talking to were trying to sell me on was this guy. And I'm like, he can barely move. Like, I'm actually concerned for his health, like, that if he gets his heart rate above, like, too high, he's gonna just keel over and die. He looked like, I mean, he kind of looked like walking diabetes.
Yeah, because one of those DVDs that I bought was their very first deathmatch tournament, right? And, like,
yeah.
They were advertising the first ever deathmatch tournament in America. And I'm like, fuck yeah, this is going to be great. And, like, god damn it, dude. Like, most of that show was complete garbage as a whole. And the main event was Supreme and John Cronus in a no-rope barbed wire match. And this was Cronus was just completely out of shape at this point, you know, and this I think was probably what, about 2000 2001, so like both of these guys had already worked two fucking death matches beforehand, so now they gotta have a 5-star fucking no rope barbed wire match, and they were just so blown up before they got in the ring. It was like basically they would Irish whip each other, and like a toddler could run faster, man. Like, it was just, they were just going to fall into the barbed wire. And I remember him slipping and falling out of the ring, and it was just, so yeah, I can, god damn it, XPW. I like the Messiah, though. I'm not going to say he was the best, but I actually enjoyed his work for the most part.
Yeah, he was alright.
He
may have been one of the few on there that was semi-decent, but everyone else was so drugged out and just strung out and out of shape, and it was sad. That would probably be my way to describe it. It was just sad.
Yeah, that's a really good. And I hated Chris Claus too, man. Like,
oh, he sucked.
He tried his best to be Joey Styles, man. I'm not even gonna say he was that bad. Like, I heard stuff of his later on when he tried to cut out the whole, you know, gimmick and he's screaming and stuff, and he wasn't terrible. But during that phase, he just tried to be more over the top Joey Styles, and I'm like, fucking just quit, man. Like, I would literally mute the fucking DVD and play music and watch the shit. Mm-hmm. Like, it was that fucking bad. And whoever that other guy was, the Spanish guy that was his commentator, he was the saving grace of it, though, 'cause he was terrible, but he was so bad, he was fucking hilarious.
Yes. The only XPW match I want to see that probably isn't any footage of is when they showed up at the ECW show and they had a brawl in the parking lot. That's the only XPW match I care to see.
Well, I mean, you could see somewhat of some footage. You know, they kicked him out of they were in the front row at that pay-per-view.
Yeah.
I believe footage of that exists, but yeah, I'm sure nothing else does. Oh, Jesus. I can't believe you brought up XPW. We're covering shit I never thought I would think of again.
I can't believe I didn't know about this, because, like, I'm looking this up right now, because I'm like, what the fuck is this? I mean, I didn't know they ran shows in Pittsburgh and stuff like that.
They ran shows in Pittsburgh?
Yes, that's later on. Yeah. Fuck yes,
get
dude.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yes, they did. That was towards the end. That's what caused them really to go out of business. Had they stayed in fucking California, they might still be going on now, dude. Well, I don't know, Rob back. So I think Rob's still in fucking prison. But, yeah, dude, they took over the ECW arena. Like, they got CZW kicked out for a little while. That was a big deal, because, like, they brought in Shane Douglas, and, like, they had, because he tried to do, like, a new triple threat. I can't remember who was in it besides him, Vic Grimes, and one other person. Because, like, he had Lizzie Borden with him as, like, his new Francine. And they had brought in, like, Shark Boy and shit. Like, this is before, like, Joe, are you looking at, like, the year of when this happened? Was it, like, 02, maybe?
It said in 02 that Douglas and Cody Michaels had helped move XPW to Pennsylvania and doing an East Coast invasion.
And that was, it was wild too, because I remember specifically that's when the fucking Philadelphia Athletic Commission put the ban on blood and hardcore shit. So that's what ruined them, because they were promising this blood and guts. So like, they had to think of, like, and I want to say like it was called Supreme's House of Horrors match, and it was just like fucking weapons hanging from chains at the top of the ECW arena, but it was like bullshit stuff, and the fans were like booing everything because there was no blood, but they couldn't do anything. It was so fucking bad, man.
So what you're saying is Bray Wyatt stole that gimmick match tonight from Supreme.
You goddamn right he did. Yes, he did.
Okay.
Yeah, the
you
only
heard it here first.
The only difference is Bray Wyatt's not fighting Necro Butcher or anything like that.
And fucking the hardcore homo Angel.
Oh god.
Yeah, that was a fucking thing.
I will admit, I don't know who Lizzie Borden was, and I looked her up, and I can see why.
See?
Very nice.
Well, see, the thing was, like, so, Joe, since you don't know, and I guess for whoever listens to this bullshit doesn't know.
No one.
Yeah, right. We'll get more listeners than some other people will. Rob Black owned a pornography business. So, like, most of the valets, at least early on, were porn stars. So Lizzie was a porn star. It was one girl, Chrissy something was, I mean, if you look up any results from like the first year or two and you ever see a woman on a show, they were a fucking porn star. Like that was his whole gimmick, you know, like, so of course the DVDs, like that was the advertisement, you know, you could see nudity on him because he could legally do that because he owned, you know, all this fucking footage of them doing all kinds of shit. So it was a weird adventure. And there, if you need to go look up some of their old TV shows, they were the fucking worst, man. I remember that a lot. Oh, please do. Yes, you fucking do. It was so.
I feel like that's a good set of shows to review for one of our podcast ideas.
Oh, absolutely. Yes,
well, you know what's just what's funny is I just clicked on Rob Black's Wikipedia or Wikipedia thing, and it shows on here his last name Zakari or whatever, but he started a blog talk radio show in 2013, and like the sentence here just cracks me up the most, because I guess because he was in the porn business, he decided that his show would start calling out unsafe practices in the porn industry on different companies and stuff. And this sentence says the Daily Beast called him porn's dirty whistleblower. That just sounds really dirty to me for whatever reason. I'm like, is that like a porn move right there? The dirty whistleblower?
Probably. Someone go to Urban Dictionary quick.
Yeah. Is that the same as like the rusty trombone? But
God. Wasn't Messiah the one that got his thumb cut off?
Fuck yes, he was, and it was because of Lizzie Borden and Rob Black. Supposedly, it was never proven, but he was caught. Rob Black was married to Lizzie Borden, mm-hmm. and he caught Messiah fucking her. That was his valet, and he, you know, basically, I guess you can kind of, it's like a Triple H of Stephanie syndrome, you know, gimmick turns to real life. Mm-hmm. So that's why he had out of nowhere. He left the company, didn't drop either titles that he had in XPW, and he shows up in CZW. And then fucking two guys went and cut his fucking thumb off for fucking a porn star.
I think I remember seeing like a 48-hour special or
yep, something like that. Yep.
Yeah, it's one of those 60 Minutes or something where they were on there talking about that. Basically, it was like a mob type of deal where he got his thumbs clipped off.
Yeah, they tried to cut his dick off and they couldn't do it.
Well, yeah, probably. I would imagine he became an innie when they pull your pants down and try to do the choppy choppy gimmick with his dick.
God damn it, it was Yamaguchi-san. I knew it.
Oh, man. You sure Vince Russo wasn't booking for this company back then?
It's worse. It was way worse,
dude,
than anything he's ever came up with.
Joe, you have no fucking idea, man. You just gotta stop and see this shit.
Yeah, we definitely need to review this for our little Mystery Science 3000 podcast, because that would be prime material for this bullshit.
Oh, God, don't do this to me.
I don't want to watch it either. You know how bad XPW is? When I type in XPW, there's GeoCity websites popping up for... that's how shitty XPW is.
That's all you needed to tell me. We don't...
Yes.
Holy shit.
Well, that's what I was telling Gary, that there's a, because I heard this on another podcast, that there was a pro wrestling company in California. I want to say it was during the late 80s, early 90s. I'd have to look it up. But basically this guy had created this wrestling company, and he had like wrestling gimmicks that were ridiculous. Like there was a doctor that was the abortionist, and he was a tag team partner with Cletus the Fetus, and it was so ridiculous. These things that I saw on like YouTube and stuff, I'm like, who the fuck comes up with this fucking shit? And there was a clown that was the Ku Klux Klan, and I was like, oh, good God.
You want to talk about something that's all gimmicks, by the way? You need to look up, there was this company that was based out of Argentina. I can't fucking speak Spanish, so I'm probably going to butcher this, but I think it was called Titanes en el Ring.
Oh, hell yeah. The fucking, I seen a video of the android fighting.
Fuck yeah, dude, versus La Momia.
Yeah, the most.
Holy shit, dude. Like, that's the shit we need to watch. Fuck XPW. Like, we need to watch that shit, because that's gold.
Yeah, the 605 Super Podcast, they had played a couple of those videos or whatever, and I was like, holy shit. The fucking android.
It's fucking great, man. Like, it's, some of this stuff's hard to find. Like, you know, thank God for the internet and, you know, stuff has come about now, but. Dude, man, I've looked up some results and some stuff about it. They were drawing huge numbers from this like Chikara type stuff, man. Like, I mean, like Chikara didn't have shit on them. They were just completely crazy. And oh God, I could be here for days talking about all the gimmicks, man. It's just a shit that I dream of doing.
Better or worse than Kaiju Big Battle?
Oh good God.
Oh man, it's close, man. See, like, it's really fucking close.
I just watched that for the first time whenever they had the show during Mania weekend, and all I heard for a year from different podcasts, oh, this is so great, this is so different, blah blah blah. Well, they got the different part right. I don't know how great I would say it is. I mean, it is fucking terrible. Considering their set is destroyed within like 30 seconds.
Right.
And you have I think that show went like almost 4 hours long. It was fucking
holy
insane.
Fuck.
It was super long. There was like a purple spiked dildo that came out at one point. I'm assuming it wasn't supposed to be a dildo, but that's what a short shot looked like to me. And they had like this fucking block person that was talking about lemon parties. And if you don't know what a lemon party is, look that up on the internet. If you're over 18, don't do it if you're under 18.
Disclaimer.
Yes. I don't want to get sued.
Please don't. Damn it, my name's attached to this shit now, man.
Yeah, mine too. I have like an actual professional life out of this. I don't need to be attached to Lemon Party Podcast. So.
Fuck yeah, me and Joe got kids, man. Like, oh, fuck.
Well, Gary's telling me that they're having a Kaiju Big Battle in Pittsburgh. If I wanted to go. And he's like, after that, they have adult wheelchair races. I'm like...
No, big wheel races, okay. Not wheelchair. Big wheel.
Wow, man, I was totally going to go because I was like, I'm curious to see what these wheelchair races are like.
Big wheel.
But, I would start running shows just so I can have wheelchair races now.
I'm like, man, this would be great.
At least the wrestling is only going to be an hour long. Well, I guess whatever you would call that wrestling. Yeah, it's going to be an hour long, and then it's mostly getting drunk and riding big wheels. So that part I would go to. I'm not so much sure about the bullshit before, but I wouldn't mind riding a big wheel all hammered up.
And from what I've heard from everybody, because I've got some friends that specifically went to the one at Mania weekend and like going to whatever, and it's just part of the experience really being there. You know, like, watching it, you're not going to get the enjoyment as if you were there, you know? Because, I mean, it is fucking outrageous.
I guess. I came in with an open mind, but that was pretty brutal. I don't know.
I don't know. I immediately, when I seen the Kaiju Big Battle, like, video, like, it reminded me there's a song by the band Beck. And it's called Sex Laws, and the music video would show it was like Jack Black and a couple people like going to like a self-help thing about dealing with sexual addiction, and all of a sudden you just see these random objects like start banging each other. And one
of
them,
washer and a dryer banging.
Right. One of them was these giant monsters like Godzilla and stuff, and all of a sudden you just see them dry humping each other. And that's immediately where my mind went when I see this video.
I think it would be good if you, like, made a YouTube series. Like, have you ever seen the Chappelle Show where he's, like, fighting Godzilla?
Yeah.
Oh, God,
yeah. He bangs a volcano?
Yeah.
Yeah, something like that where they, like, pre-taped it in, like, an actual set where you could, like, take your time destroying the city instead of a cardboard one. Like, what pissed me off the most about the fucking show at Mania with them was, like, their biggest set piece got destroyed within 5 seconds because they hit a person in it. And it was like the Epcot Center, and the guy, I guess they were trying to mimic the gobbledygooker thing, and he like hatched from the fucking Epcot Center, and in the process of falling over, he destroyed like 3/4 of the set, and they had nothing to fucking smash. It was just like cardboard boxes, and then I'm like falling in and out of sleep, and I remember at one point there was like 7 dozen fucking pizza boxes all around the ring. It was so fucking bizarre. Maybe I was too sober. I don't know. I probably needed a drink to watch that. But.
I'm going to say that's what it was, too. I'm too sober for this bullshit right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, apparently.
I agree.
Apparently you needed, they should have put a disclaimer that you're not under the influence of heavily prescribed narcotics. You should not watch this show.
Well, how much are you
maybe
fucking
they should
on?
Do like Well, he would be more awake if you had actually got on here on time.
Hey, you shut the fuck up, okay?
What I think they should do is have Kaiju Big Battle revive XPW, because I'm sure there was all sorts of pills and drugs and things backstage at XPW, and they could hand them out at the crowd like they do at a baseball game where you come in and you get like a free hat or a free program or something. They could just have like pill night, and they could just hand them out to the audience. And they all can get blasted and have a great old time because they can imagine something cool happening instead of what actually is happening in the ring.
I feel like there have been shows that have done that too, but maybe I shouldn't talk about that.
Yeah,
oh, man.
You hear some shit, man.
Well, I'm sure.
What they should do too is then get the, remember on, I think it was Spike TV, they used to have Asian show that they would always dub over with,
goddamn right.
MXC.
Yes.
That MXC, get that guy, that one Asian guy that's always doing the announcing and stuff. He could be the main play-by-play guy for that Kaiju Big Battle.
Now you're gonna make it my fucking mission to find the voice actors for that. Cause that would just, oh my god, that'd be a dream come true. God, man, I used to watch that show so fucking much. Most Extreme Elimination Challenge was my shit. It got so popular, too, around that time, like, because, like, during that time, like, I watched every fucking bit of wrestling that I could. And Al Snow and Coach were the commentators on Sunday Night Heat. So anytime there was a local job guy, it was always, Al Snow would always call him something Baba Ganoush. It would always pop me because it was a fucking MXC reference.
Yeah, the Guy LaDouche.
Oh, God, Guy LaDouche. Oh, my God. Now, yeah, when we get done with this, I'm going to go watch like 20 fucking episodes of that just so I have references for next week or whenever the fuck we decide to record again.
Never.
Ever, ever. I'll still be an hour late no matter when it is.
Oh man. Were there any matches that it's pretty much the opposite, that you weren't excited to see, but then when you go to see him you were surprisingly pleasant with it?
I'm sure there were, but I really can't fucking think of any.
Me either.
Oh, fuck.
I have no clue.
Oh, well, you know what? I know I made a big deal about us not talking about a lot of current shit, but I will say that Shane versus AJ was a lot better than I thought it was going to be this year at Mania, for what it was.
Yeah, and to the same accord, Brock and Goldberg I thought was the best 5 or 6 minute match that they could have possibly had at the same show.
Very true.
Yeah, I agree with those. I definitely did not think you know, at the time, like, I couldn't figure out why you would put AJ with Shane, given, and then, you know, you're gonna have Shane sell for AJ and things like that. But no, I definitely was very pleased with that match, and same with Brock and Goldberg.
That AJ match is probably the best match on that card.
Yeah. I agree wholesale. Me and my buddy were just talking about that earlier today. That was probably my favorite match of Mania.
Because, you know what, there was, looking back now, trying to think, like, I think one match that I was, that I was surprised about, and we talked about it a little bit earlier, was I was kind of surprised about Hogan Warrior, because I remember, before I had seen Hogan Warrior at WrestleMania 6, I had seen some Warrior matches. I mean, you know, the ones with Rude and stuff weren't terrible, but given what Hogan was and everything like that, when I finally seen that match, I was pretty happy with it. I thought it was a really good match.
Hogan could work when he wanted to, man. Like, if you go and watch anything of his in Japan, he was 100% a different wrestler. But I think, like I was talking about earlier, when you talk about guys like John Cena or Randy Orton or whatever, like, people complain, oh, they don't do anything. It's like, when you're on TV and you're wrestling every fucking day of the week, you don't want to do anything. But then you go to a different audience, so when Hogan would go to Japan, he was working his fucking ass off. So I think, like, he pulled a lot of that stuff out with Warrior, and he made Warrior do more than Warrior ever had to do with anybody else, you know?
Oh, yeah. I thought Hogan had a sweet drop kick when he worked New Japan and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you didn't see big men get up like that, and then you watch him in the WWF, it's like, wow, I didn't realize he was that agile for as big as he was, but yeah.
He's also a lot smaller when he went
to... I'm really trying to think of something that surprised... Oh, well, I never... So, of course, like, I was less than a fucking year old when the actual match happened, but WrestleMania 5, the Twin Towers wrestled the Rockers. And so I remember, like, you know, as a kid, like, getting the tape and seeing the match. And I was a huge Rockers fan, man. I fucking still, like, to this day, I love the Rockers. And I love the Twin Towers. But, you know, they're two big guys, and especially big guys for the 80s. You know, not going to do a whole lot, especially that Boss Man at that time. He hadn't really found his – he was still pretty green, really, by 88, 89. That match was fucking great, man, for an 80s tag match. It told a hell of a story, man. Like, if y'all haven't seen that match, go back and watch the Rockers and Twin Towers from Mania 5. Like, it's a fun little, like, maybe 8-minute tag match. I loved it.
Oh, yeah. I watched that Mr. WrestleMania or DVD put out with Shawn Michaels or whatever, and that match was on there. And, yeah, I really liked that match. I thought that was pretty good. When you watch that, I mean, Michaels, obviously, you could tell he was going to be something. But, man, freaking Jannetty, man, I don't know what it is, but I enjoy watching him. I just, like, it just kills me that he couldn't get his shit straight.
Fuck yes.
I always thought his run in WCW was good, too.
Mm-hmm.
I think he came in right around the same time as Martel, and I thought Martel was excellent in WCW, too. They never really had anything too much to work with, but their matches were always great. I always remember those being standouts for me when I was watching Nitro.
Oh, yeah, like, and especially if you go back to, like, watching Rocker stuff, Jannetty really was the better wrestler, at least during that time. You know, but he just couldn't keep himself clean, and, you know, Sean had the better look, and I guess probably the better presence, but as far as actual work rate, dude, Marty was fucking great, and he can still bust ass, man. I've seen him on indie shows, and Marty is still good.
Yeah, it blows my mind that, you know, what he could have been. I mean, I don't think he probably would have been at the level of Michaels, but I think that he would have at least been one of the top mid-card guys in the company or anywhere else had he just kept his head together.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But then again, I guess you could say that about a lot of people.
I think you could dedicate a whole show to people that kind of screwed themselves based on their extracurricular activities.
Yeah, well,
that's a whole fucking episode.
Yeah.
to this day, I'm still mad at Marty for, like, fucking up two potential WrestleMania matches with Shawn. I just know that at WrestleMania 8, that probably was going to be a singles match. And I know for sure the original plan at WrestleMania 9 was supposed to be Marty and Shawn, and they had to hurry up and switch it to Tatanka.
Oh, good old Tatanka.
And if that's at WrestleMania 9, is another show we could go back and review.
Oh, God. Don't...
There's a lot of problems on that one.
You know, you talk about SummerSlam 95. I, for whatever reason, maybe it's the aesthetic of it, I love WrestleMania 9, and it is the biggest hot garbage that I've ever watched in my life. But for whatever reason, I don't know if it's because it's outside and the whole, like, you know, Roman theme of it, I love it. I love it, and I see the problems with it, especially towards the end with Hogan winning the belt, but,
Oh, yeah, but little kid me was fucking, I popped so huge when Hogan came out and won the belt. But now as an adult, I'm like, oh, God damn it, Terry, what the fuck?
Exactly, and that's what I was just about to say, that you took the words out of my mouth. Yeah, when I watched that then, I was all over that. I thought that was, like, the greatest thing ever. Hogan won the belt and came back. But looking back on it now, and kind of knowing some of the stories and what went into that, it's just kind of just sucked the fun out of it.
Oh, God, yeah. But not for nothing, though, talking about WrestleMania 9, man, that fucking Head Shrinkers and Steiners match, holy shit, man.
Yeah, that match was awesome.
Dude, Scotty Steiner almost died on a spot. Do y'all remember the spot where they accidentally sent him out of the fucking ring onto his head?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
Well, he's probably had a few of them coming his way, because for amount of jobbers that he's dropped on their head with the fucking Frankensteiner.
That's true, and he about half murdered Owen Hart with a fucking screwdriver, too. If you've never seen the Steiners versus the Hart brothers on their random one time they ever worked at, like, a house show.
I think I might have, yeah.
He hits Owen with the fucking screwdriver. I mean, I could be exaggerating, but it felt like 3 minutes into the fucking match. Just bam! I'm like, why the fuck would you do that?
Yeah, those guys were brutal. I mean, I remember watching some of the WCW Saturday night shows and stuff, and watching them just beat the piss out of guys. I'm like, and just thinking, like, man, these guys are really good, but just, like, holy hell, I'd never want to step in the ring with them guys.
Dude, with Starrcade 90, I was watching recently, and, well, I say recently, when did the network drop? Like 3 years ago? Anyway, I don't know why Starrcade 90, I'm like, I should watch this shit. There was like a random, it was like an international tag team tournament, and each bracket was a different country. And the Steiners represented America. And they were wrestling two guys from South Africa, so-called. I can't remember what their names were, but one of the gentlemen happens to be Rocco Rock. So he runs at Rick Steiner's on the outside, and he's going to do like a somersault punch, like a tope over the top rope onto Rick Steiner. I don't know if he didn't call it, or I don't know if Rick Steiner decided that he just wasn't going to fucking take the bump. So Rocco Rock flies over the top rope, and it's a nice fucking flip. And Rick watches him, reaches his arms up, and just power bombs him halfway down onto the fucking concrete. And looks at him and smiles. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, man. Like, fucking worse, man. Go back and watch that shit. It's like the first match of the tournament, and Rick Steiner just murders Rocco Rock. It's like, well, man, he's dead.
I would love to hear stories from some of these guys that are, you know, that were jobbing to them, because you know damn well that if they got dropped in their head, they were probably getting an extra $50 in their paycheck, and that was it.
Oh, it depends on which company you work for.
Yeah, so
we gotta wrap this up.
We might as well, yeah. I mean, I was surprised. I didn't think we were gonna go long. We're at the hour and 15 minute mark, but
yeah, that's good.
Yeah, what the hell? I mean,
we stopped having listeners about 3 minutes in. So,
oh, I'm sure
this is all extra.
Right, so
we're good.
This has just been for our own amusement, I guess, just to hear ourselves.
Sure, which. Per usual.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a normal fucking conversation.
Well, what I can say to help close this fucker out, I would say just stay tuned. I mean, if you like what you hear, you know, eventually we'll, I guess, come out with more shows and do different things. We'll start reviewing some pay-per-views and things like that, and just pretty much what you hear today is pretty much what you're going to get, and then with maybe a little bit more structure.
Probably not.
Hopefully more entertaining.
Exactly. But yeah, if you
go to Ringside Chat at Facebook.
Yeah.
And join there. We need more people.
Yeah. And check Cord out on the independents. I mean, he needs to make that cheddar. You know.
That's true, man. I got merch everywhere, man. Follow at CM Dangerous on Instagram and Twitter. Find me on Facebook. It's facebook.com/CourtMontgomeryWrestling.
And don't let him fool you. He's also on SmackDown Live. He wrestles under Baron Corbin.
Baron Corbin.
So,
see, that's what the fuck you get. You fuck up your own joke.
I really did. I wanted to call you Corbin Burnson, but I didn't think you're the actor for Major League.
Jesus Christ.
That's a joke for nobody. Really, nobody.
I laughed.
Yeah.
I did too. So, we got it. Fuck everybody else.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, if you like what you hear, just give us some feedback and stuff like that. Like I said, we're gonna do more shows. Hopefully, we'll see how this goes. I'm optimistic. All right, yeah, the glass is half full. So we'll go from there. And like I said, yeah, just give us some feedback. Go on Ringside Chat. You'll see Gary post his articles from PW Ponderings, and just give us some feedback and let us know what you think. So, guys, if you want to end it, end it. All right, guys.
See you later.
All right.
Get the hell out of here.
Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.